for the list of questions that Jimmy gives us to kind of help keep me on task. And so I'll just kind of get started with the questions that he gave us. And the first one is our personal history. And my name is Tommy. And that's my given name. That's the name that's on my birth certificate, okay? Tommy. I bet Jimmy, you're a James, right?
No, sir.
You're a Jimmy. Okay. But Chris, are you a Christopher? Say so.
You don't even go with me.
I can look. I have a website. I can look that up. And then
Billy Joe.
Okay. But so I'm a Tommy, and I was also born in a house. I wasn't born in a hospital. How many of y'all were not born in a hospital? Okay.
I don't remember.
You don't remember. Okay. Well, I was born in a house, and it's on my birth certificate says I was born in Hartsville, Tennessee, and born really almost on the Trousdale-Macon County line. And several years ago, Meg wanted to go up and see the house I was born in. So we took that little drive up through Hartsville, and you go through Hartsville, and you turn left there on the Highway 10 that goes up to Lafayette. And there's a little community up there called Hillsdale. And as you get up close to Hillsdale on the county lines there, you take a road to the right, and then just right up on the left is a little white frame house. And so we drove up there. And when we got up there, the house was kind of all run down, needed painting, yard grown up, the roof needed repairs. So Mick kind of said, so this is where you were born? I said, yeah, this is where I was born. And so then we kept going on another little trip to kind of just show her where I grew up. So when we got back several months later, actually, she said, I wish I'd have taken a picture of that house that you were born in so I could show it to the boys and show them where their dad was born. So she convinced me to drive back up there again to that little house. And when we got there, the house had, you know, new siding, fresh paint, yard was cut, all new shrubs and things like that. So Mecca was really kind of disappointed that she didn't get to show the boys the dilapidated house that I was born up in. But I lived in Lafayette till I was 9 years old, moved to Gallatin where I went, spent the rest of my youth growing up, went to Gallatin High School. Then as we'll get on to the story behind how I met Meck, but went to pharmacy school, worked at Sumner Regional Medical Center for 38 years there in Gallatin as a director of the pharmacy. Came to Madison here when we came back from pharmacy school in 1977. So, but really the story behind my marriage, you have to start about 4 years before I actually met Meck, because I went in high school, I dated a young lady, a couple of years in high school, junior year and senior year. And so her father was a pharmacist. And so she was going to go to University of Tennessee in Knoxville, do pre-pharmacy. So I was dating her. So I thought, well, I'm going to go to the University of Tennessee in Knoxville. And so I think I'll just try the pre-pharmacy curriculum myself. So I did. And so you go a couple of years there in Knoxville and get your prerequisite work out of the way. And then you go to the University of Tennessee in Memphis, which was the only pharmacy school in the state of Tennessee at the time. Like today, there are 6 pharmacy schools in the state of Tennessee, but that was the only pharmacy school in the state of Tennessee at the time. So spent a couple of years in Knoxville. We continued to date. Went to Memphis and began, let's see, we had our first year there in pharmacy school. And then the second year, at the beginning of the second year, she dumps me, okay? And to this day, I'm really not still sure why she dumped me, but spent the rest of that year, and then at the end of that year, met a little young lady who was a incoming first year pharmacy student. I was a second year pharmacy student, little redheaded gal, and so we had a picnic that spring, the pharmacy school did, so I invited her to that picnic. And so then I think we had another day or so after that, and then she went home for the summer to work, and I went home for the summer to work, came back the next year, and we continued that dating relationship. So all that said, you never know how God is going to work in your lives, because I owe a lot to that young lady that I dated in high school, because if I hadn't dated her in high school and kind of followed her to pharmacy school, I never would have met Mac. So it's funny how things work out. So then Mac and I have been married next month, 47 years. So we have two boys. One, the oldest one is 40 years old, and the youngest one is 36. They both are CPAs. I remember we used to sit at supper table at night, and we would talk kind of pharmacy stuff, you know, talking about how the day went, because she's a pharmacist, and so we could, and you talk in some of these pharmaceutical terms and names and things like that. And so we asked the youngest one day, are you interested in, you know, going into pharmacy? And he said, no, it sounds too boring. So he became an accountant. So he's in the exciting world of being an accountant now. So I never could quite make that connection there. But both my sons are CPAs. The oldest one works at Vanderbilt. He's a tax accountant there for Vanderbilt. Youngest son works for controller for an online company that does accounting for other businesses. So. Oldest son is married, have two granddaughters, which that's one of the reasons we lived in Gallatin for 35 years and drove south to come to Madison. Originally, when we got married, she worked at Vanderbilt. I worked in Gallatin, where I worked for 38 years. And so we came to the Madison area. We lived in an apartment over here at the Heritage House Apartments, where we lived there for a few years, bought a home in Madison there for about 7 years, and then moved to Gallatin. So we moved to Franklin 3 years ago because of those granddaughters, because we were driving through Nashville from Gallatin to Franklin, and if you drive through Nashville very often, you know that that's not something you want to do on a regular basis, and we wanted to see those granddaughters on a regular basis. So we decided to make the move to Franklin. And it was in 2020 that we decided to make that move to Franklin. Mech had just finished back in 2019. She got diagnosed with a rare sinus cancer. Okay, so she went through all of that. Had radiation, chemo, surgery, and so to this day, 3 years later, she's still, you know, doing well. But after she got through with all of that, she decided, well, we need to be closer to the grandchildren. Let's move to Franklin. So in 2020, when COVID was all going on, we were selling a house, buying a house, moving to Franklin, doing all those types of things. So my granddaughters are 6 and 8. You know, it's just something different. You raise boys, and then you have girls as grandchildren. It's completely different, boys and girls, in the way they act and behave. And so it took a little adjustment as far as knowing how to. Boys seem to roughhouse and holler. Girls seem to squeal and have this high-pitched squeal that kind of pierces your ear. So that's kind of just a short history in marriage and family background. The next question was, how did your elder opportunity come about? I was asked, it's probably been almost 20 years ago, Some of you that have been here for a while remember Pat Birch. He was a dentist. He was an elder here. Pat came to me one day and said, we would like you to consider, you know, serving as an elder. And I just thought at that time, you got the wrong guy. I mean, I looked at the gentleman in that sat in that elder's room that I respected and I just revered. And plus there were, you know, there's always things going on. I was really busy at work, had several projects going on, just didn't seem like the right time. So I said no. And some time passed later, and Terry Ashley came and asked me. Terry was on the eldership at that time. He said, would you consider serving as an elder? And I still had the same excuses. I didn't feel like I was worthy. Still had things going on in my life that I didn't feel like I had the time, because when you serve as an elder, it does take time and effort, and you've got to be able to commit to that task as well. So I said no again. And then some time passed, and a little later, and Mark Street came to me. And I don't know why they had this. You know, you got Pat Birch, then you got Terry, then you got Mark Street. They kept getting smaller in size, people asking. I thought you would go the other direction. I thought you'd have somebody like Mark Vivio come in there and and pound on me. But Mark said, you know, we really wish you would consider serving as an elder. And at that point, I said, well, let me think about it. Let me pray about it. And it was just so happened that my youngest son was getting ready to go to college. And he had gone to, my oldest son went to Good Pasture, went to David Lipscomb, you know, straight down the Church of Christ line there. Now my youngest son, he went to Pope John Paul to high school. And then he had decided he wanted to go to Samford, the Baptist college. And that was fine, you know, because each person you got to let determine their path. So we were going down for orientation for freshmen. So we're driving down to Birmingham, and I had told Mark that I would think about it. So we went down there, and while they were leading the children around and doing their orientation, they had a chapel. The campus minister was doing a chapel for the parents. So we were in there, and his message that Sunday morning was kind of like, you know, a lot of times you have plans in your life that you make the plans for, but it turns out differently. Just like he had plans in his life that he wanted to be an athlete, but he turned out being a member of the band. He had plans in his life that he wanted to marry a certain person, but it ended up he married somebody completely different. And the scripture he used for that day was Proverbs 19:21, which says, many are the plans in a person's life, but it is the Lord's purpose that prevails. And so that kind of hit me and convicted me on that day that I had all these plans in my life that I wanted to see carried out like I wanted to see them carried out, but maybe there was another purpose that God had for me. So that kind of convicted me right there that I was going to say yes to serving on the eldership. And it just turns out interesting. I came back and I told Mark, and then 17 years later, you know, here I am. But it was interesting that my son went to school at Samford that one year, had a great year, did well. At the end of that year, he said, you know, I think I want to come back and go to Lipscomb because I have more friends and just... So I've always wondered if that situation was just part of God's plan to get me there, to see, you know, for me to hear that and for that message that I heard by that campus minister to convict me to serve. So that's kind of how that opportunity came about. And then the next question is, how is that decision affected you? I think that decision, not only is it given me an opportunity to serve in a that capacity, but just being in the same room with those gentlemen, you know, and see how they live and how they serve. And it affected me as far as bringing me in a closer relationship with God, a closer relationship with family. Just the opportunity to serve in that capacity. So, you know, I know without serving in that capacity, it's hard for you to be on the outside looking in. And, of course, sometimes we have access to information, you know, that we can't share. But another question about how it impacted me is that, you know, you get the opportunity to serve people, pray with people, you know, learn about things that really are affecting their lives. And sometimes all you can do is pray. Other times you can, you know, do something more tangible. But so as far as how it's impacted me and impacted our family, Mac being the wife of an elder, you know, I think that kind of impacted her as well as far as her relationship. Like, we were always involved as far as I was a deacon prior to that, and we were involved in neighborhood group programs, zone programs, things that was called back then. We call them care groups now, small groups, but we were always involved in that. But it just brings you to a higher sense of responsibility and a higher sense of service. Like now she's upstairs teaching. She didn't like to call teaching a class. She likes to call facilitating a class. That's something she would have considered in the past. So, but I think it both brings us, we become more, you know, into the Word, you know, and just, it just gives you a greater sense of responsibility and accountability. I mean, you feel more accountable because you've been given this responsibility to help lead. And I always look at it as a servant leadership. I feel like I'm more in a role of serving than leading, but it's both. And the next question was, how's this decision impacted your perception of corporate worship? And I'm not exactly sure where to go with that, but you know.
So the intent there, Tommy, was as you come into worship as an elder versus when you just came into worship as a regular member or just a deacon, as you become an elder, has that changed any of your perception of what happens inside that room during our worship time? If that makes sense.
And I guess, I mean, you know, today, people have different opinions as to what should happen inside that 1 hour that we are called together to worship together. I think we do a good job of some balance, just like a cappella music. We are committed to a cappella music, but I think Anthony does a great job with our worship team. And I mean, I don't know if you noticed, but Anthony spends a lot of time selecting the songs that we sing on Sunday and how they relate to the message that's being given. You can see that. I get a grid. He sends out a grid to us about the order of worship and the songs that are going to be sung and who's leading and who's doing the Lord's Supper and things like that. And you can tell he takes a lot of time in selecting the songs that would relate to the message that's going to be presented. So I heard his father, Keith Lancaster, say one time, he said the greatest motivation for a cappella music is to do it well. The worst is to do it not well. So I think we do a good balance. I mean, two of the biggest gorillas in the room is a cappella music and women's role, you know. And I know probably some people think that we don't do enough there, but women are essential to our work here. I always tell people, said, you know, we got a woman business administration that handles all the money for the church. She's sitting right back there. we now have a woman that hands out communion every Sunday. You know that? You know, that used to be a big deal, women passing communion. But yet now we have a woman that passes, I guess because it's not inside the worship center there, that's okay. I don't know. But I've never had anybody come to me and say, I think we should have a man standing there handing out the communion. I've never had anybody say that to me. But so anyway, we have ladies that do presentations as far as announcements and things like that sometimes. So anyway, I think we try to keep some balance there and still stay true to the Church of Christ intent that we want to do. So next question, and I'm trying to be cognizant of the fact that we need to get up there and respect and congratulate Frank. So try to get through a few minutes early. What is the most enjoyable aspect of being an elder? And I would say it's the people. You know, you tend to get to know people a little better, a little more on a personal level. Going to mission trips with Paul and Mary now for 5 years, and Laverne. And I love that Baja mission trip. I know several of you in here have been on it. And if you ever wanted to go on a mission trip, that would be one I could recommend, because it's really kind of a family-oriented mission trip. I mean, we've had times when we had three generations ago. We had a grandfather, a son, and a grandchild go. So the most enjoyable part of that is people and getting to know people better. And sometimes you get to know them, you know, because they have problems and things that they need to bring to you and you need to pray about and you need to somehow try to help them when you can. So, and we've seen, you know, we prayed with people and sometimes things really work out well and sometimes, you know, they just don't. And you just have to say, you know, God, you know, has a higher thoughts and higher ways of solving our problems, and sometimes we don't see the best. And the next question is the most challenging aspect of this position. And I think, again, it's the people. I mean, the same answer for both questions. Because when you get involved in people's lives sometimes, it can get messy, you know. And but that gives you an opportunity to, you know, to love on them, to try to serve them, to try to whatever they're bringing to you to work with. And so, there again, I would answer essentially both those questions with the same answer: it's the people. The next question is, why have you and your family stayed at Madison when many left through the years? Well, when we started at Madison, I said, you know, back in 1977, we lived in the Madison area. We moved to Gallatin, 20 miles or so away, you know, 25 minutes away from church. But that was, you know, Madison was always our home. Our children, our boys, grew up here at Madison. They, you know, went through the youth program, went through the children's program. They both served as counselors at camp, you know. So Madison was our home, okay? And even when we moved to Franklin, we just moved from 25 minutes north to 25 minutes south. So we're just driving the opposite direction. And when we moved to Franklin, you know, we had several people say, yeah, are y'all still going to attend Madison? And our answer was always yes. And our answer is that because Madison's our home. This is our church family. We've gotten to know, you know, Most of you, many of you, I know more by face than by name, but a lot of you I know by name. So this is a church home, and we never really considered when things were going on, and there were splits. We were always going to be here to try to work through those things and to do what we can to reunify. I think you can always be in unity with each other. You can't always be uniform with each other. Some people are going to, sometimes you're going to have to just agree to disagree sometimes, but always do that in love and respect, and you're still a body of the church. You're still a body, part of the body of Christ. So as far as that's concerned, we never felt like we wanted to go anyplace else, but here at Madison. And I know the many of you that are currently sitting here went through that same situation, and y'all made those same decisions. So I thank you for that. The final question is, pull a character or story out of Scripture to help us understand your particular role in the eldership. Well, before I came an elder, I kind of felt like Moses, you know, when God came to Moses to say, I want you to lead my people out of bondage. And Moses said, I'm not your guy. I kind of said that like two times. I'm not your guy. So, I mean, that's the only comparison I would have between Moses and myself, is that I felt that going back to Proverbs 19:21, said I had plans in my heart, but ultimately God's purpose prevails. So, and as far as others, I mean, I've had people say to me, I see you kind of as a Nehemiah, because Nehemiah was kind of a servant leader, kind of a lead by example person, and I would like to believe I, you know, lead by example and work beside, you know, Nehemiah. He actually, you know, when they rebuilt the wall of Jerusalem, you know, Nehemiah was there working with them. So I'd like to think that maybe that's somebody that I could relate to. So those are all the questions, Jimmy.
I think
that's it. It's 10:56.
I like it.
I know Jimmy and I are, we're on time people, I think.
I try to be. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it, you know, when I drive to church on Sunday mornings, you know, not much traffic. It takes about 30 minutes. On Wednesday afternoons, when I'm driving to Madison, it's 45 to an hour. I always leave early because I never know how long it's going to take. And sometimes when the traffic backs up, I mean, if it looks like I'm going to be close to the elders' meeting, I begin to get a little nervous because I hate to be late anywhere. So, and if Buck is chairman of the committee, he makes you run laps, you know, if you're late to the meeting. So I don't like that either. So anyway, thank you for this opportunity. I hope you maybe learned a little bit something about me during this time, and look forward to serving with y'all in the future. So thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, Tommy.